listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where I share a lot about travel and a little about life. The show format takes another turn this week, though probably just as a one-off. I didn't plan it this way, but I ended up with a pretty long segment. I had asked Brett Snyder, the Cranky Flyer, to record a segment with me a couple of weeks ago. We had a few schedule conflicts, but managed to find a good time to record. In the time between when I first reached out to him and when we actually recorded, Brett wrote about two more things that have been on my radar. In fact, I covered one of them on my blog, Pizza in Motion. Once we got talking, I asked him if he had a few more minutes to cover some more topics, and we just kept jawing. We started out talking about preferred seating, sort of a phenomenon that came our way from U.S. Airways and grew to take over at American Airlines, and sounds like it'll be spreading to United soon. Brett brought up the interesting point in his original post about how basic economy essentially screws people who decide to buy up to a regular economy ticket so they can get a desirable seating assignment. From there, we wandered into a discussion about how American Airlines is no longer going to move regular, non-elite customers to other airlines when their flight is delayed or canceled, except when they make an exception. It's like they're just trying to find a new, unique way to shoot themselves in the foot. Finally, we covered the recent news that United appears to be coming after some customers who have broken their rules. Brett has an update from United. They're serious about this. To keep the show to our normal length, we'll follow up with just one segment after that. We've got Jen back from Deals We Like, and she's got an update on Southwest Airlines that I'm sure you're going to like. Don't forget to send us your questions about travel. We'd love to read them on the air and give you a bit of help with your travels. You can find us at social media, search for the Miles to Go podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and you can also email us at miles2go@gmail.com. That's miles2go podcast@gmail.com. Lastly, you can help us out by subscribing to the podcast wherever you're listening, like Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. By subscribing, you'll get our episode for free as soon as it's published each week. We'd also love it if you'd leave us a rating and a comment. We read all of your comments, and by subscribing to and rating the podcast, you're helping us reach more listeners, and we really appreciate that. With all that covered, let's get you to the show. The Miles to Go podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, joining me today is Brett Snyder, the Cranky Flyer. He's really not that cranky, but it's a great name for a blog, and it's also a great name for a service. He and I are going to talk a bit about a frustrating thing that the airlines have been doing for a while now that seems to be getting more prevalent. But before we do that, I'm going to throw in a shameless plug for his Cranky Concierge service. Whether you need help monitoring your flights for problems or if you need planning assistance with your next award trip, Brett's team can help, and for when the you-know-what really hits the fan, his Cranky Concierges offer urgent assistance if your flight is canceled or delayed, and their response times are excellent. I have plenty of friends who have used the service and scream his praises. Brett, welcome to the show.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the shameless promo.
It was 100% shameless. So a few weeks ago, you wrote a post about preferred seating fees. And just to set this up for our listeners, the legacy airlines, and right now most specifically American, have started charging for what they refer to as preferred seats. And to be clear, I'm not sure who these are preferred by, but these are generally seats that are closer to the front of the plane but don't necessarily have any extra legroom or extra benefits. I first observed this on U.S. Airways years ago, and it's obviously spread widely through the combined American after the merger. Unsurprisingly, Scott Kirby at United has said that they plan to start doing this soon as well. Explain to folks why this makes you mad.
Sure. Well, maybe I should back up a little bit for people that haven't read my blog and don't know my background, that, you know, I come from the airline industry. I used to do airline pricing. And I generally support the a la carte model, the ancillary fee model. So, yeah. So, you know, with that background, knowing that then I don't like this fee, you know, there's a specific reason for it. It's not just a general, oh, I hate fees. So, but with this particular fee, you know, well, of course, there's this issue that you don't actually get anything different, as you've said.
Right.
You know, it's the same seat. You're a little closer to the front, but who cares? You know,
somebody said, I don't know who it was. Somebody said, and maybe it was Doug, said, well, it's sort of like a concert, and
Scott.
Your seats are closer to the, so was it Scott?
Yeah.
It's like, I just hearing that comment, it was like, this is so not like a concert.
Right. Well, that's what I said in the post, you know, unless the pilots are going to come out and pull out their guitars for me, then I don't really care, you know, how close I am to the cockpit. I mean, the only thing you could even imagine this being preferred in any way is that, you know, I guess it can be a little quieter in front of the wing than behind the wing sometimes. And, you know, maybe if you have a really tight connection, you're going to get off 2 minutes before someone else. But that's a pretty tough sell to say, hey, you should buy this. It's more just about, well, we can extract money from people. But what really bothers me the most about it here is that the airlines have spent a lot of time building this new structure with basic economy, right? And basic economy is supposed to be the lowest of the low for the solely price conscious traveler who doesn't care about anything else but getting where they're going, doesn't need any of the frills, doesn't need a seat assignment. In some cases, you can actually buy a seat assignment from basic economy, but you know, it's not meant for those people. It's meant for people who just really want cheap, cheap, cheap. And then you have regular economy, which is supposed to come with a seat assignment. That's one of the key differentiators between basic and regular economy. And so now what they're saying is, well, you get a seat assignment if you happen to be one of the 10 people who can grab one of those freebies. Otherwise, you're still going to have to pay, and you're not getting anything better. You're just paying for it. So it seems a little bit like false advertising to me when they say you get a seat assignment. When, you know, between that and all the seats that are blocked for elite travelers, you really don't have that much opportunity to choose unless you book far in advance.
Yeah. And in the example that you used in your post, and we'll link to this in the show notes, as you mentioned, on a flight that's, you know, more than a couple weeks away from departure, there's nothing but middle seats available. So it's almost like a hidden tax on the person who decides to buy up from basic economy that hopefully they figure out before they purchase the ticket. But if they don't decide to select a seat right then through the booking process, they might not. And so they might be stuck not only paying the spread between basic economy and regular economy, but then, you know, potentially, you know, $20, $30, $40, as much as almost $100 for something other than a middle seat in the far back of the plane.
Yeah, depending on how far you're going. I mean, that's the example I included is the worst of the worst. Americans A330s, since it's 242 across, they call anything on the sides a preferred seat. And
yeah.
So you have zero chance of getting any of that. And, you know, if you like a window, you're out of luck. If you want an aisle, maybe the last 10 rows in the center section, you'll have access to that. But otherwise, it's just middles. And I understand, yes, I want an aisle or a window over a middle. And, you know, maybe I should be willing to pay for that. But then don't tell me that I get a seat when I book my regular economy ticket. Tell me that I get a middle seat and I can pay up for more. It gets so complex and ridiculous that you start looking at the ultra low cost guys out there, and it makes far more sense. Where Spirit or Frontier says, okay, here's your ticket. You get nothing. If you want something else, you add on to it. And then I see their seat map and I say, okay, well, I can pay for whatever seat I want, but no one's telling me, hey, your seat's included for free. So it's, you know, much more appealing when I see it that way.
Yeah. And in the example that you used in your post, I certainly fly the legacy carriers more than I fly Spirit and Frontier, but I've flown Spirit and Frontier and I've flown them more than once. And, you know, I'll tell you, when I think about the comparative examples here, I think of two things. First off, you know, in your example, you show the big front seats are $77 on Spirit. And for those folks who haven't flown Spirit, a big front seat is probably the most appropriately named product in the travel industry. You get exactly what the name says. You get a big seat in the front of the plane. You don't get drinks. You don't get anything else. You get a big front seat. But it's pretty similar to a domestic first class seat on American or Delta or United. But it's like almost exactly like a bunch of seats that are still flying around on US Airways planes. And so that price is the equivalent to an aisle or a window seat in coach on a similar length American Airlines flight, you know, going as far back in the cabin as in your example, row 26. So fairly far back in the cabin, you know, crammed in the back, I can pay that, or I can pay for a big front seat on Spirit and get a lot more space.
Yeah. Well, the big front seat is one of the best values in travel domestically as far
Absolutely.
As I'm concerned. I mean, it's amazing. And I think a lot of people unfairly just say they don't want to look at a ULCC. But now that Spirit's operation is running better, if you can get that big front seat, that's going to be better experience than anything you get on another carrier and coach. Even if you have to pay for a drink, who cares? It's still going to be a better experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when they add Wi-Fi, it'll certainly be even easier for me as a business traveler to fly them. Because as you say, the operations have improved. And the two biggest knocks for me were operational efficiency, which, you know, obviously leads to problems with ear ops just because of the frequency with which that I can get another flight when my first one breaks. And then, you know, being able to work on a 3 or 4 hour flight is critical for me during a business day. And, you know, Spirit right now doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. What was that? And before they had PreCheck too, that was one of the things that bothered me too.
Yeah.
But now they're crossing all these things off the list and becoming far more appealing as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the legacies just have backed into this incredibly convoluted fare structure, which is not really driven by strategy as much as it's driven by, well, how can we just grab some more revenue here? It's tactical as opposed to a strategic look, and it just confuses people. But, you know, the one thing I would say here, one of the biggest problems that we really have is the inability to compare. You know, as much as people like Google Flights or Kayak or Expedia or whatever it is that they like, they do a pretty bad job of allowing you to compare like products between airlines.
Yeah.
And, you know, one day when that gets fixed, that'll remove a lot of the friction here. And I think you'll see some of these really confusing structures start to untangle just because it'll be easier for people to have that information to make the decision. And then the airlines will have to rethink it. But until that day, they can live on obfuscation and just general confusion to make a living.
Yeah, and I think the better that those sites get at reporting operational efficiency as well, you know, I'm sure it will take time, but I think if people are hammered over the head repeatedly with, you know, hey, Spirit doesn't cancel half of their flights anymore, you know, they're much more reliable than they used to be, that may start to sink in when they see that price difference. And, you know, you talked about, you know, how the legacy carriers have gone about this. And when I think about it, you know, I think of, you know, my dad, and I love him to death, but my dad's a fix-it guy around the house. And, you know, over the years, we had this summer house in New Jersey, and he would sort of like, you know, knock out a wall and build a porch. And, you know, we need a little bit more room when my sister grew up and was in college and stuff. So he knocked another wall out, and the house sort of has an odd shape to it. And, you know, odd comparison, but when I think of how this all comes together now for a carrier like American, I think about that cottage on the Jersey Shore with the sort of like odd protrusions from it, and that neither basic economy nor the concept of charging for a seat in coach are necessarily radical by any stretch of the means. But when you bolt them all together, it sort of just has this Frankenstein look for what the customer is actually getting.
Oh, you can go back almost 20 years. I mean, if you think about Economy Plus, right, or just extra legroom seating in general, when United rolled that out, it was meant as a perk. It was meant to get people to buy higher fares. It was never a revenue generator on its own. And it took several years before they said, hey, man, we could charge for this. What a crazy thought. And so they did. And then, you know, bag fees came about, or the first bag fee came about when oil made its huge run up and the economy tanked 10 years ago. And so it was always just this knee jerk reaction to, well, what's the situation today? How do we fix it with the easiest way? And, you know, in the end, you just have this mess where it just doesn't seem coherent.
Yeah, you and I will both sound old when we say, well, back in the day, you know, you talk about Economy Plus, and I'm sure you remember, because I do, I was an American flyer back before then, when it was, you know, their entire marketing campaign was focused around more room throughout coach. And it was, you know, we're going to pull out seats and, you know, you can fly American because our value prop is our coach seats have more room than the others.
Yeah, and it was a terrible idea. It's human nature is to, for a lot of people, I mean, a huge percentage of air travelers, human nature is you want a cheap fare. And American just said, well, no, everyone wants extra legroom. And that's not the case. And it's funny because United almost looks like the leader here, right? Because they came up with Economy Plus, which was only half the cabin or whatever it was. And it looked like, oh, they had the foresight to know that some people would want it, but not everyone. It's like, no, they didn't. They just got lucky. Yeah. And then they backed into a strategy and said, oh, wait.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I absolutely agree. If American had found a way to charge, you know, the average customer for that extra legroom and then find a way to just give that extra space to, you know, elite business travelers, they might have been onto something. But not the right time or place for that concept.
No. Usually when you see an airline doing something that's big and bold like this, it means there's going to be an economic crash shortly.
So while we've still got a little bit of time, I had a couple other things that that I wanted to line up to try and get your opinion on, and they're things that I've weighed in on in the past, and I think our opinions are probably loosely similar, but interesting to me. And first and foremost is American Airlines' recent change to how they'll handle your next delay or cancellation if you're not an elite flyer. So if you're just run of the mill, Joe Blow buys a ticket on American, you don't have elite status. Essentially what American Airlines is now saying is they've reframed a policy stating they will not move you to another carrier, an unrelated carrier like a United or a Delta. They'll still in certain situations try and move you to Alliance carriers, but the goal there is going to be to keep you on American metal, which eliminates a significant advantage that they had over, say, Spirit and Frontier.
Yeah. So, right. So, you know, I think when this was initially rolled out, you know, American didn't have a policy at all, apparently. And so it was really left up to the individual gate agents, station managers, who, you know, depending on the station, whoever's in charge of that, to determine what do we allow, what do we not. And they said, well, we need to have a policy. And I agree with that. That makes sense. Have a policy. give something people can refer to. But I don't understand why they went with something so just draconian for no apparent reason. I mean, I get you're an elite. You get taken care of. Fine. But if you're just a regular traveler and they say, we'll try to keep you on American. If we can't, we'll keep you on one of our joint business partners, so BA or JAL or whatever. And then we'll keep you on One World, and then we'll keep you on code shares on non-One World, I guess like Alaska and Fiji Airways and whoever. But then other than that, you're on your own. Asterisk, there could be 12 million exceptions, but those are up to you, so we're not going to really tell you. So to me, this policy isn't really helpful because ultimately you're still just saying, well, it's at your discretion. Maybe now it's at the manager's discretion instead of the gate agent. And they're just punishing regular travelers in what seems to be somewhat unnecessarily. Because this really is about domestic travel, right? Internationally, you have a lot more partner options. There's a lot more you can do. Domestically, you don't.
Sure.
So it's really about we don't want to put people on United and Delta. I understand that. But if you don't have an option, then this is one huge difference you can tout between you and a ultra low cost carrier, even a not ultra low cost carrier like Southwest. You know, we can put you on another airline and we'll get you there if you need to get there. I don't know how much it costs them a year. They won't tell me. I tried, but you know, at some point you need to look at it and say, this is just not worth fighting here. We should have a policy. Maybe the policy they have for elites, for low level elites, is more than 5 hours in a delay at your arrival airport, and they'll put you on another airline. Maybe you do that for everyone. That wouldn't be all that horrible if they had something like that. But when they just come out with this and tell their agents, okay, you can't put anyone on another airline now, unless you feel like it. By making an exception, I don't really see how that helps anyone here. It just makes them look bad.
Yeah, I think it creates a tremendous point of friction between the customer and the gate agent. And I think in this specific situation, it's most frequently going to be the gate agent, in that elite travelers are going to know that when their flight gets delayed, they're going to pick up the phone instead of standing in line, and they're going to talk to a phone agent. And if they don't get a good answer, they're going to hang up and they're going to get another phone agent. And I would say, based on my personal experiences, that they'll likely find someone that will make the move that they want to make, if it's within reason, for a domestic flight choice. On the flip side, here what you're saying is you're giving a customer, and likely a long line of customers, because if the delay is a long delay, you know, there's at least a couple dozen, if not a lot more, non-elite travelers on that plane, based on the numbers that we've heard historically that the airlines talk about, with the number of customers who only fly once a year. So you've got this big long line of folks, and you've got one gate agent. And you've got, you know, 25 battles in a row. And it's, you know, how many times are you going to have the customer pummel the gate agent, or the gate agent pummel the customer, before you just cry uncle?
Well, that's the thing. Ultimately, if you have 25 people in line, what manager is going to say, no, stick to the policy, if they have the ability to override it without penalty, which they do? So, you know, all you're really doing is just kind of sniping in different places. And it just doesn't seem like they're going to get much out of this except for bad press. And I don't know. It seems short-sighted to me.
Yeah, I think when we talk about the manager and the gate agent, I think, as you say, you know, if there's no ramifications, I think the force multiplier here is, I won't say rogue agent, because that just sounds overly histrionic, but we both know there are plenty of agents who look for ways to stick by the rules, letter of the law, folks, bad mood, whatever it's going to be. And the airlines have struggled with this for decades, on how do you keep everybody well-informed and well-intentioned on that front line. And, you know, if somebody's having a bad day, you've handed them a tool to piss off your customer. And if they're in a bad mood, they're not wrong when they tell the customer no. You know, you're just creating this tool that allows them to treat that customer in a very bad way.
Right, right. And you're also, you know, if you think about the gate agent situation of just standing here and having people come at them, if somebody walks up to them and says, listen, there's room on this flight, can you just get me on this flight? And it's on another airline. Why are you going to take that option away from the gate agent? I mean, I understand if they had said, look, never on another airline ever. Then the agent still has to have the fight, but they can point to the airline and say, I'm not allowed. I'm sorry. I wish I could.
Right. I don't have this tool. Next. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But instead, now it's, well, there is a tool there and they can still override it. And by the way, reservations can authorize it too. So it's, you know, you don't like what the gate agent's telling you, either go find another gate or call res and just keep calling, and maybe someone will decide to override it. And it's just a bad way of handling it. I don't understand it.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, great example. This has been in place for roughly 2 weeks, let's say, and I had a flight within the last 7 days, and I had this exact issue. Flight was delayed. It was not 5 hours. I'm no longer executive platinum on American. I'm platinum. And, you know, without even a flight, the agent just moved me over to United because I needed to be there for a meeting. And I asked real nicely, and she just did it. It wasn't even she didn't fight me on it. And I anticipate there'll be a lot of that, just given the, you know, the variability between agents.
Yeah. So then what does that mean? It just means it's the status quo for the operation. Yet American gets a black eye for, you know, creating this policy and putting it out there in the first place, which apparently is going to get ignored.
Yeah. All right. And lastly, to wrap up, this one's a little bit more niche. Most of our listeners won't know what this is. Some of you have heard me talk about it, but there's a company out there called Skip Lagged. And what they do is they help folks find flights that that break the rules of the airlines. Essentially, it's the easy example would be flying from Dulles to Chicago to LA might be, you know, a $700 ticket. But if I flew Dulles to Chicago, it's a $1,000 ticket. So it's cheaper to take the longer flight just based on the way that they have the flights loaded in the system. And so Skip Lagged helps people find these variances in the system and book a cheaper ticket United tried to sue them a couple of years ago and lost. And ultimately now what's happening is people that are taking advantage of this and short ticketing or using what's called hidden city ticketing are getting bills from United saying, hey, you did this you know, one time, 10 times, 50 times, you owe us X number of dollars in damages. And it sounds like you spoke with United about this and that they said that they do intend to move forward with some remedy here.
So what United is saying is if you're a repeat offender, so if this is something that's becoming a regular issue, they're going to go after you. If it's an individual that does this one time, they don't think it's going to be worth going after that, at least not at this point. But they're really looking for the people who do this regularly. Maybe they have, you know, weekly business trips and they're doing it every single time. I think we both saw the one that, 38 times he had done it or something like that. You know, pretty substantial what they've done there. And so they're going after these people and they're saying, hey, you flew this. The fare at the time for what you flew was this. And so you need to pay us the difference. And I am totally fine with this. I think I know I get boos and tomatoes throwing at me, but the airline pricing structure, the way it's set up, really is focused on the cost from one point to the other. And historically, connections have been cheaper because there's more competition for a connection and it's a less desirable product than a nonstop. And so you can get a connection for cheaper, but if this happens enough where people are buying connections and then just getting off at the hub in between, then it ends up causing this problem where your revenues become substantially lower on the local market. And then you have to find a way to change your structure. And what that means is connecting fares have to go up because right now you're getting that discount because it's a worse product than a nonstop and there's more competition. But if it's hurting the revenue integrity on their nonstop routes, then they're going to have to do something to change it. A little bit of this is happening with market dynamics. We've seen a lot lately as, you know, low-cost carriers go into the biggest markets, like a Dulles to, or Washington to Chicago in general, may very well be cheaper than if you were buying a ticket Washington to Chicago to Cedar Rapids or something like that. But, you know, that'll help to some extent. But for the most part, the airlines have said this is the rule. And even if you disagree with the way that they price, they have the right to set the rule and say, you're not allowed to do this. This is our product. And so they should be going after people because if you have a rule that you don't enforce, what's the point of having a rule?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, for folks who are listening in, you know, Brett and I did talk about this a little bit before we hopped on. And so I thought we had a difference in opinion and it sounds like we're fairly well aligned. I think I don't specifically think United has the legal leg to stand on, if you will, to take somebody to collections because they may never have agreed to the higher price ticket. But I do agree with the damages, if you will. And I think that United has other remedies that I think are certainly more enforceable, like, you know, canceling your membership in the Mileage Plus program. In United's example, you could obviously bar them from flying the airline, which is another point that Brett brought up. And I remember a funny story from years and years ago on Flyer Talk of, you know, back before Austin was really a popular market, there were a number of business travelers who used to use Austin as their last leg if they lived in Dallas-Fort Worth. And it drastically dropped the price of the tickets because they couldn't fill the flights to Austin. So these business travelers would come home and they would book, say, you know, Dallas to LA, and then their return trip would be LA, Dallas, Austin. And those flights are fairly close together, but they would just get off the flight in Dallas and they wouldn't take the Austin flight because they lived in Dallas. That's where their car was. And that's American Airlines' headquarters. And as the story goes, Americans started meeting these customers at the gate, you know, oh, you know, Mr. Pizzarello, it's so good to see you. We're going to walk you to your Austin flight. It was a subtle hint at first. And then if they said no, it was, look, we understand what you're doing. This is your warning. If you do it again, we're going to cancel your account or we're going to force you to get on that flight to Austin and make you drive back. And so I do think there are some ways the airlines can handle this. And I agree with you. If you're doing this, if you're using these techniques, there's a risk. And, you know, if if the airline decides to come back and punish you for that, well, you know, you should absolutely know the risk going into it. That doesn't mean you should never do it. That's a choice each person has to make, but you have to understand there's a risk if you're going to break the rules. These are rules that you're agreeing to when you're buying the ticket.
Yeah. And I know people will say, well, there are a million rules and I can't know them all. I say, well, that's kind of the way it works. Unfortunately, if United wants to set a million rules and probably at least half of those are federally mandated, then so be it. But I think the way United's going about this makes sense. You could find someone easily who just stumbles on skip flagged, right? And they book it. And then they say, wait, I didn't know what happened. I mean, by going after these repeat offenders, these are people who probably know what they're doing. And they're going after it. But I agree with you on the debt collection piece. I don't know. I mean, to me, debt collection seems like something that says, here, you agreed to pay us this amount, and now you're not paying us. But no one ever agreed to pay United the original amount. They're just trying to skirt around it. So I don't know how that works. I agree. The easy things to do are, remove everyone's miles or cancel the Mileage Plus account or bar them from flying the airline or the sneaky stuff like meet them at the gate. I like that. Someone on the blog today suggested that in some markets, if this were to happen and there was an option, that they could go in and say, oh, we found you a more efficient routing and send you through a different hub or something. schedule change them out, which that's fine, but that's probably a waste of time, right? But it's still any of that stuff is fine. And then if it got to be to the point where someone just continued to do this and was really abusing it, then I think you sue them. I mean, I think you probably have a case here. You have a rule. They're breaking your rule. It sounds like a civil suit to me.
Yeah, I think there are lots of ways that United and obviously American and Delta can work to discourage this behavior. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do. And, I think if somebody is doing it that many times, they probably should be discouraged from it. It does hurt the rest of us in some incremental way if they have to raise fares to get around it.
Yeah. And I think, one of the things we were talking about before, too, is on the concierge side, I'm glad that they're doing this because when we help people book their travel, we follow the airline's rules. I mean, that's part of the reason people come to us. We know the rules. We know how to handle that, what to look for and different ways that we can operate within the rules to help people get something better than they might find on their own. And so if United is saying you can't do this, we've certainly had people come to us before and say, hey, I want to do this. And we'll say, well, you can't do that. We won't book that for you. And then they go off and do it on their own and get mad that we won't do it. But now, if United's actually enforcing this, then we can point to it and say, listen, there are real potential consequences here, as opposed to now where we just kind of look like idiots, where we're enforcing a rule that the airline's not even enforcing on its own.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I think it's, I do think that this is probably a small subset of people. And I'll be interested to see how it plays out. Well, Brett, thanks for taking a bunch of time with us to hop on the podcast. When you're not here and talking about the airline industry or helping folks out on Cranky Concierge, where can folks find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Cranky Flyer. You can find Cranky Concierge at Cranky Concierge on Twitter. And then, of course, crankyconcierge.com and crankyflyer.com.
Awesome. Hey, Brett, thanks a bunch for being on the podcast with us. Hopefully we'll have you back on again soon.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, well, we're taking a break from the show. I wanted to tell you about a new travel podcast that one of my friends just launched. The We Travel There podcast covers a different destination each week in 30 minutes or less. The host, Lee Huffman, finds experts on each area and does a deep dive into each destination. We Travel There will help you find the best surfing spots on Oahu and the Penguin Parade in Melbourne, Australia. He's already covered a couple of my favorite places to visit, like Hong Kong and Vancouver. Find We Travel There on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you find great podcasts. Now, back to the show. Welcome back. It's time for another It's a Big Deal segment with Jen from Deals We Like. Hey, Jen, how are things in Boston today?
Hi, they're good. It's actually nice and sunny out, so that's nice.
Yeah, we're getting to chilly here in D.C. I'm home for a couple of days, which is great.
Yeah.
And it's time for us to talk a little bit about Wyndham. Wyndham's got a pretty interesting status match offer out right now.
Right. This is something that we haven't seen as long as I can remember. Some of the other hotel chains throw out status matches from time to time. And right now, I guess it's Wyndham's turn. So they're actually giving everyone the opportunity to earn a equivalent status to what you might already have in another hotel chain up front for 90 days, which is pretty nice. There's no requirements staying to receive that status within those 90 days. And then if you want to go ahead and maintain that status, if you're trying to match to platinum, you'll just have to hit 7 nights within the 90 days or 14 nights for diamond within that 90 days. And I actually think most people will be utilizing it just for that 90 day time period when they have an upcoming stato. So to ask for your match strategically is definitely important in this promotion.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, do they, in this one, do they show, do they ask you for status that shows that you've had stays? Because I know there've been a couple status match offers that have come up recently, and I didn't see that in the terms and conditions here.
They don't. So that's one really good thing, is all you have to do is have that status. Doesn't matter if you've ever stepped foot in one of the other properties or not in the past, you know, year or few months. And some of those hotel chains that you can match to get you that top tier status by just having the credit card
right
in the equivalent chain. So for example, to get Wyndham Rewards diamond status, you can have IHG platinum status. And to get IHG platinum status, it just requires you to have the IHG credit card. Same thing with many of the Hilton credit cards. You get automatic gold status, and that will also get you diamond status. There's definitely ways to just automatically get that diamond status out there. With that being said, I wouldn't say that Wyndham diamond status is the best status to carry, but if you have a Wyndham stay coming up, you might as well, you know, have that status and, you know, hope that maybe you'll get a suite. That's one of the perks of having diamond status, although it's not something that you can request in ahead. It's based on availability when you check in. And, you know, you get late checkout, early check-in. Those are definitely benefits, but you're still not going to get free breakfast. There's no lounge. So there's definitely some perks that you'll get with other hotel chains that you will still not get by having top tier Wyndham status.
Yeah, I agree. And also remember too that Wyndham has had a couple of opportunities in the past where they've put out promotions and then changed the terms and conditions on the fly. And, you know, while this one doesn't really have an end date per se, I'd also just, you know, comment that as a general rule, I would recommend that your mileage may vary with Wyndham, and just to be careful, they haven't, you know, they haven't nailed, you know, reliability and consistency on delivery of benefits.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they've changed terms. They've pulled promotions without telling people. Even just last week, I had a hotel where they changed the cancellation policy without telling me. And there was a big issue there. It resolved itself, but it definitely took time. So Wyndham is not one of those that you can always trust. And it's unfortunate that they've played by some shady rules, I guess I'll say.
Yeah.
But, you know, might as well get that status. And sometimes you can then use that status to get maybe a status match at another property, another hotel chain. And people are using this also to get that total reward status match with Caesars Entertainment and those hotels out in Las Vegas. So that is also one reason maybe to get that diamond status if you're not actually going to stay at a Wyndham hotel, but then looking to travel over to Vegas.
Yep, definitely a number of strategic opportunities here. If you've got a Wyndham stay coming up or you're thinking about staying at a Caesars property in Vegas, definitely something to pay attention to. Jen's got more details on her site, and we'll obviously link to that in the show notes. Jen, let folks know where they can find you when you're not on the show with me.
Sure, you can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com. Find me on Twitter, Facebook, at dealswelike, and send me a note at dealswelike@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch for being on, Jen.
Thanks, Ed, for having me.
Talk to you soon. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back on the Miles to Go podcast for the final two pennies with a reminder on earning miles for your shopping. Just as I was wrapping up this week's episode, I saw a post on a shopping portal bonus. We'll link to it in the show notes. I need to rope someone in to do a longer segment on why shopping portals are so important, especially for family travelers. But for now, let this serve as a reminder. Right now, for example, you could earn 7 Chase Ultimate Rewards points per dollar for eBags purchases, 6 for Macy's and Neiman Marcus, 10 Alaska miles per dollar on Groupon, and 15 United miles per dollar from 1-800-Flowers. There are literally hundreds of merchants on the various airline and credit card shopping portals. I've bought pool parts and tires from shopping portals over the years and everything in between. If you're thinking about buying something online, make sure to check out the shopping portals before you purchase. Two or three extra clicks could literally earn you a few thousand miles. If miles aren't your thing, there are plenty of cashback portals. We'll dig into this more soon, but expect to see plenty more holiday shopping bonuses coming down the pike. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. If you have questions about travel that I can help answer, send them in so we can answer in a future episode. You can email us at miles2gopodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. Just search for Miles to Go Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, you can help us out there by hitting the subscribe button, whether you're listening in Apple Podcast or Google Podcast, and leave us a comment and a rating. We read all of the comments, and they help make the show better, and by subscribing and rating the podcast, you're helping us grow the audience. Thanks again for listening, and a big thanks to Brett and Jen for helping me put together a great show this week. We're already putting together next week's episode, but until then, we've got miles to go.